5 FM WTAX, brought to you by Memorial Health System. You have questions about your health, and Memorial Health System has the answers. Our phone lines are open at 753-1240. That's 753-1240. Now, Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM, WTAX.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of Ask the Expert. I am your host, Ray Lytle, with you once again. My guests today are my experts. Let's welcome Sandra Weiss. She's an adult outpatient therapist with Memorial Behavioral Health Counseling Associates. Hi, Sandra. Good to see you.
Hi, Ray.
And Brenda Flesch, also an adult outpatient therapist with Memorial Behavioral Health Counseling Associates, as well as a registered nurse with the Partial Hospitalization Program at Memorial Medical Center. It's great to have both of you guys on the show. We're going to talk about depression today. And let's start with what depression is, because I like so many, I mean, I'm sure I don't understand it. What is depression? Like, give me a definition.
Well, first of all, I think it's important that everybody know that depression is not a weakness. It truly is an illness. And you know, there are specific things that we look for to diagnose a clinical depression, and it looks different in different people, but often it includes frequent tearfulness, lack of energy and motivation, having difficulty sleeping or sometimes sleeping too much, having really low self-esteem. Some people find that they really overeat because they're emotionally eating, or possibly undereat. Maybe they have no appetite. They usually feel helpless and hopeless.
But, I mean, let me ask you this, Sandra, because I'm like that every time I get bad news or if someone passes away. I mean, I'm like that, you know, quite often when something bad happens. Am I depressed? What's the difference between, say, clinical depression and just being in a state of sadness? Is it, do you know what I mean? Like, what's the difference? Or Brenda, what do you
think? Yeah, you're looking at a change in your functioning, okay? So, you know, when we talk about somebody, you know, a symptom might be that suddenly somebody's grumpy all the time. But if they're grumpy, you know, Oscar the Grouch every day of the week, and that's nothing unusual, that's just maybe that person. But when it interrupts your ability to live your life, that's different. You know, sadness is a normal emotion that everybody experiences. Thomas More wrote about melancholy in his book Care of the Soul back in the 90s, and how in the Victorian age we respected melancholy. We expected that people are going to have times of sadness in their lives. But today, when people say, they confuse depressed with sad a lot. And depression is a medical condition that totally, terribly disrupts people's lives. It's a lot like, I always tell people, it's a lot like smoke. It's pervasive. It gets into every part of who you are as a person. You physically, emotionally, spiritually, your relationships, even, you know, all kinds of aspects of our lives.
Do you feel physical pain from depression?
Oh, lots of people do. We had one lady talk in group about she felt like her muscles had been dipped in concrete. And people with chronic pain issues a lot of times will report an exacerbation of their symptoms.
Really?
Yeah. They're finding much more about that than they've ever known. Even some of the latest research is showing the input of the gut and the neuropeptides, the neurochemicals, whatnot, in the gut that affect how we feel and think.
You said something about, does depression make us fat? Or can it make us fat?
There is a really strong link in a lot of different places.
That's it. I'm depressed. I've been depressed. 30 years I've been depressed. I didn't even know it.
Dude, we'll sign your paper.
But I mean, there is a tie there. I mean, you said earlier that when it becomes something that affects your life. Sandra, if somebody say I'm sad, you know, I'm sad because this happened and I'm going to go to work today and I'll feel sad and my friends at work will understand, blah, 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 blah. Somebody who's clinically depressed, they'll be like, I can't even bring myself to go to work. Mm-hmm. Is that a good, I'm just going on what you guys said. Is that a good kind of difference there or a good explanation?
It can be an almost unsurmountable chore for a clinically depressed person to crawl out of bed, to brush their teeth,
really?
To take a shower, to do any household chores, just common self-care can be terribly difficult for someone who's clinically depressed.
You hear changes in emotion and depression and stuff like it can lead people being losing their job or losing their marriage. Or I mean, so many things can happen from it. We always think, I don't know, I think everybody says suicide. And I guess that's a potential risk. But all these other things are really can be affected by this as well, right? I mean, the whole, I can't do anything. I can't bring myself to do anything. When I see those shows like Hoarders and stuff, you guys ever seen those shows?
Mm-hmm.
Is there depression there? Is that because they can't bring themselves to clean the house, or is that more of addiction? Or
there's theories that people with hoarding issues have unresolved grief. And one of the therapists that used to work with us, that was something she felt really strongly about. Letting go of things are very difficult. And grief is a lot of working through and letting go of things. And I mean, that was her theory, and a lot of people work from that.
There's a lot of manifestations, though, that seems to come with this. But the one that I keep hearing is this whole, you just can't bring yourself to do anything but do nothing.
We call that, the medical term that we use for that is lethargy. And it's a state of, their brain knows I should be doing this. But it's like they cannot motivate or move forward to do that. When people come into our partial program, and our partial program is an outpatient therapy program for people with depression and anxiety and bipolar disorder for adults. And most everybody, when I first came to the program 10 years ago, most everybody was applauding one another for doing a load of laundry. And I'm like, what is going on here? Well, everybody had piles of dishes, bills, and laundry. Because it's those everyday routine jobs that most of us really don't like doing that become so burdensome in depression. It's just one more thing to drop and to not take care of.
So there's a lack of motivation with it? I mean, they delay everything.
Pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
See, I'm starting to... every time this happens to me. Every time an expert comes in, I'm convinced I have this now. Now... because I procrastinate, I'm thinking, oh my God, maybe I'm depressed.
Maybe.
But I don't know why. I wouldn't know why I'm depressed. What are the causes? Is it something bad that happened in your life? Is it just chemicals? What causes depression? Do we know?
It can be a combination of things. A true clinical depression, there is a chemical imbalance in their body. It's a physical condition that can be exacerbated by life circumstances. So oftentimes you will see a life circumstance that seems to trigger it, but I've come to really believe that the propensity for it is already in their system. Some people enter a clinical depression and their life circumstances are just fine. They have really...
just for whatever reason, they're born with the depression ability to get it.
They believe that with a lot of chronic medical conditions anymore, that you're probably genetically predisposed to something.
Wow.
And then being exposed to the right or the wrong, whatever you want to call it, situations, experiences, you know, views, beliefs, whatever, then the disease manifests. So, you know, if you were predisposed for diabetes, but, you know, you might show up with that if you, you know, put on too much weight, didn't exercise, all those wonderful things, you know, that were supposed to be taking care of ourselves. Or it might be, you know, hypertension or depression, or there's just any
number. But it sounds to me like depression can lead to the things that you mentioned. Depression could lead to hypertension.
Yeah.
Depression could lead to like a type 2 diabetes, mm-hmm, as well.
You are correct. People, yes, with chronic mental illness have, I hate to even say this out loud, shorter lifespans, especially the people with severe chronic mental illnesses. They're more prone to miss medical appointments, not be compliant with treatments, not take their medicines every day. All kinds of things.
Is it possible, and I was joking about this earlier, but this is now a serious question. Is it possible to be depressed and have no clue that you're depressed? Just think it's something else? Just think, this is how I am, you know?
It's surprising the number of people, mm-hmm, that come through our partial program that say that. They go, well, I've been like this my whole life. I just thought I was crabby.
Right.
Well, no.
Mm-hmm. Or I just thought I was a pessimist, or...
Yeah.
Or
yeah, like the glass is always, the glass isn't half full or half empty. The glass is about to break. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get people like that.
Or Joan Rivers said, the glass is full of poison.
Right, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, so it is possible to have no idea that you're depressed.
Yeah, it's surprising. And then when you tell people that, they look at you like you've grown a third head or something. You
right.
Know? And then, of course, there's that stigma. It's like, well, no, I'm not depressed. I'm not, you know. wanting to jump off buildings. People can be high-functioning and have depression and maybe not feel suicidal but not feel like themselves. Some people might have what we call passive death thoughts, where they're driving along and it's like, you know, if somebody crashed into me and I died, it'd be okay. They're not actively planning on it.
I've heard people say things like, well, when I'm dead, they're going to wish they didn't say that about, or what are people going to say about me when I'm dead? Or nobody's even going to care when I'm dead. One's like, man, you talk about death a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Where people like me, we're constantly putting ideas of death out of our mind.
Exactly.
You seem to think about it a lot. And so that's part of it. Is that a sign of it?
It could very well be, and it warrants further investigation.
Let's see, you mentioned it earlier. Let me bring up, and I mentioned it as well. Sandra, can depression lead to suicide? Is that a true thing? Is it a myth, or are they connected for sure?
It can be a symptom of suicide. It's not for everyone who is depressed.
Right.
Everyone does not have suicidal ideations, but it certainly can be a symptom of severe depression that is very concerning, that people need to take seriously.
Like there's such a level of hopelessness that there's nothing else to do. They'll just end it. Mm-hmm. And the thing you said about the lifespan was really, because now, of course, I'm convinced, oh, my God, I'm depressed and I don't know it, and I'm going to have a shorter lifespan. You worry about, you know, maybe me worrying about these things, maybe I am. We'll take a break. I want to come back. I want to talk about depression just doesn't affect the person who's depressed. I mentioned earlier you could lose your job. You could be divorced. All these bad things can happen to you because of depression. So let's talk about the effects. Let's talk about you know, how do their friends and families and coworkers, you know, their extended families, how are these people affected by depression? Let's get into that when we return. It's Ask the Expert on WTAX. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening. Welcome back to Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM WTAX. Brought to you by Memorial Health System. Our phone lines are open at 753-1240. That's 753-1240. Now, Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM, WTAX.
We are back with Ask the Expert. We're talking about depression today, something that just doesn't affect you. It affects everyone. At least that's what we're going to talk about in this segment. I want to talk about the effects of depression on friends and family and your extended family, people around you. My experts, Sandra Weiss, an adult outpatient therapist with Memorial Behavioral Health Counseling and Associates. Brenda Flesch is also an adult outpatient therapist with Memorial Behavioral Health Counseling Associates, as well as a registered nurse with the partial hospitalization program at Memorial Medical Center. Let's talk about these effects on the people around you when you are depressed. Give me some examples of what we're looking at with that.
I think it significantly impacts the loved ones of depressed people. They often feel helpless because they want to fix it for them, and they can't. They feel frustrated because they want to keep giving them ideas of things to do, and it's so hard for the depressed person to get up and do those things. So they begin to feel really frustrated and helpless, and they don't know what to say and what not to say. It's hard to know what types of things are okay to say and not okay to say to someone who's feeling depressed.
And if the person themselves who are depressed can't figure a way to get out of it, well, you're certainly not. I mean, as a family member, you're not going to be able to talk them out of it. But you're right. The level of frustration would really be high, I would imagine. Because when it's someone you love, it's natural for us to want to make them feel better. And when you can't, you know, that's got to hurt. What can we do to help, though? As a family member of someone who's depressed, how do we make them feel better?
There's a really great video that the World Health Organization put together called, the first one they created was called, I had a black dog, his name was Depression. And it was written for people with depression. It's a 4-minute video. You can find it on YouTube. And then the same man and his wife wrote Living with a Black Dog, and it's for people whose family member or loved one has depression. And it's 5 minutes, and it does an excellent job of giving some solid ideas like I call it John Wayne therapy when people say, well, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, those aren't helpful things, because believe me, if they could have done it, they would have. But, you know, something as simple as tell me what you need me to do, or I'm willing to go to the doctor with you, or where can I help you begin, or maybe even sharing, you know, one of those videos with them saying, hey, this kind of looks like what's been going on. What do you think? I like to tell people that when you're going to say something that might be considered as mean or harmful, throw out your disclaimer to begin with. You know, okay, I'm only doing this because I heard this on the radio and this chick said to do this or that, you know. And then offer your idea.
Like, qualify your statement before you even make it and offend them.
There you go.
This is why I'm asking you this.
That's right. Because that way, then the ball's back in their court again, and they get to, you know, maybe there's lists of things out there you can find on the internet. Do this, do that. Well, maybe that person doesn't want you to do those things, you know. Maybe that person just wants, okay, well, just help me to remember to make my therapy appointments or, you know, whatever. But at some point, you know, if the person does go for help, it might even be, say, you know, can I go with you? What are their suggestions? Because each person's going to want to approach it differently. Like if I work with a teenager, the way that their family supports them and the way a spouse supports are probably going to be two different things. You know, a parent with a teenager that's giving medication, they're going to monitor that more closely. I'm not going to do that with my husband, you know, unless that's something that you've agreed to, you know, ahead of time.
Right. You know that that's something that he'd want you to do.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you said something that I think in my life, and I think everybody out there, everybody listening can say this to yourself. One of the most reassured a person ever feels is when someone that you care for or someone that you respect goes to you and says, what can I do to make this better or this easier, or, you know, you feel this certain way. I know in my life, my wife will say things like, what can I do to make your day better tomorrow? Or what can I do to make you feel better tonight? You know, like those questions. I've had bosses before. You get these bosses that say, well, you got to do that, and they're the worst bosses in the world. I've had bosses before that go to me and say, hey, what can I do to make you achieve your goal? Those are the best bosses in the world, the best people around you. You know, there have been times, one of my parents never says, but another one of my parents will say, well, what can I do for you, honey? You know, I mean, you get, that's so reassuring as human beings when we hear that. And I know when I ask that, I'll often ask that of my wife or my daughter and stuff. And I know that, at least I think, that they're feeling as reassured as I do when someone says that to me. And we all forget to say that. Mm-hmm. You know, we forget to say it. And I just think it'd be so much if we all said stuff like that. But you're saying if you have someone depressed, that's a good way to reach them and open up a discussion? Or?
And sometimes it might validate what they're already feeling. They might. A lot of times people that are depressed think that they're really hiding it from everybody. And that's one of the things I joke. I said, as a wife, I hate that my partner, my husband, would see it before I did. As a medical professional, I have to admit that's true.
That other people notice it before you
do? That's right. And so the other person thinks that they're really putting up the person with depression thinks they're really putting up a good front. Because most of the time, they're trying really hard.
Well, what shouldn't we do? Like, we know that that's one of the ways you can speak to them or do. What's an example of what we shouldn't do to someone who's depressed?
Telling them it's all in their head.
Right.
Yeah.
And don't tell them to just get over it.
Oh,
yeah.
Also, don't bring in your personal stories and experiences and say, compare their depression to an experience you had with being sad. Because sadness is very different from depression. And a depressed person doesn't want to hear you say, I know how you feel. I've felt that before. Unless you've had clinical depression and really been through what they've been through, it's very different.
Yeah.
So they don't like to hear, I know how you feel.
I know, as a morbidly obese person, when people go to me and they say, well, just stop eating.
Oh, like, yeah.
I'll say, man, I got to lose weight so I can get my knees fixed. They'll go, well, just stop eating. It's sort of, you just feel like going to them and saying, excuse me, but shut up. Mm-hmm. There's more to it than just eating.
Ask them to stop breathing for a while. See how that works.
You know, but you get people like that. I imagine if you're depressed and someone's saying, well, just cheer up already.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right.
Or they'll say to them, well, what have you got to be depressed about? You've got a wonderful family, a job, and it's like, you don't know the inner workings, the cellular workings of that person.
And you're making their disease seem less than.
Absolutely.
Because you obviously, it's this is something that's affecting their whole life.
You wouldn't tell somebody with cancer, hey, buck up, come on.
Yeah.
So what? You're dying. You know, I mean, you just don't do that.
Right. But people, I guess we do. I mean, now that you think about it, I think I might have been guilty of that before. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, come on, cheer up, get it together. You're doing fine. You got everything going for you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, now that you say that, it's like, boy, when I reverse that, when I show some empathy, I'm like, wow, I would hate that if someone, when I said I hate when people tell me, well, just stop eating. Mm-hmm. You know, I hate that because it's not, if I was depressed, I'm sure I would hate when someone tells me, just cheer up, laugh every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. There's so much more. People sometimes will wait years before ever going and getting treatment, or you know. And to be validated as a human that, you know, what you're feeling is a medical condition. It's not, you know, you're not being lazy. It's not character flaws. You're not a bum. You know, you have a medical condition that doctors can treat. Therapy can help, and you can improve your quality of life again.
It's interesting you bring up therapy. I want to talk about it. I want to talk about therapy. I want to talk about recovery. Now let's get into how we make people feel better. We'll do that right after the news. You're listening to Ask the Expert on WTAX.
Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM, WTAX.
We are talking about depression on today's Ask the Expert. Sandra Wise and Brenda Flesch are my experts this week, and we've had a great discussion so far. We've talked about what depression is and what the difference is between clinical depression and just, you know, sadness. And we've talked about how it affects the person suffering from depression and the effects on other people. Let's get into recovery now. So someone realizes that they're depressed, and they also decide, hey, I'm sick and tired of being depressed. I want to get fixed. I just want to feel better. So they do what? How do they get themselves? What's the step that they take in order to get on the path of feeling better?
There are a variety of avenues, really, that people can take. And it depends upon the individual's comfort level of who they want to talk to. They can start with their primary care physician. Oftentimes, that's where people start. They might mention it to them and see if they might want to try a low dose of an antidepressant or something with them to get them started. Oftentimes, the primary care physician would then refer them for counseling, refer them to a therapist, might help them schedule an appointment. But they don't have to go through their primary care physician. You know, they might just talk to a friend who has some information that they can share with them and help them get started. Or they might just call Memorial Behavioral Health and schedule an appointment to come in for an assessment. They don't have to have a referral. So they can call us directly and request an appointment. They can also go online. We have a free depression screening on our website, which is memorialbehavioralhealth.org. And if you get on that website, it's a little difficult to find, but at the top of the page you'll see where it says, get help now. If you click on that, it will then ask a question. If you are in immediate threat, if you are suicidal, and if you click no, it will take you to the confidential questionnaire that you can go through, which is a free depression screening.
It's yes or no type questions?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then what? It'll tell you whether it suggests that you see an expert?
Yes, it will tell you if it recommends that you seek help.
Can you explain the differences to me? Like, you know, we hear, oh, you need to see a psychiatrist, or you need to see a psychotherapist, or you need to see a counselor, or you need to see a psychologist. What's the differences? Of all those different things? I mean, when you say talk to someone, you could just go talk to a counselor, right?
Yes, it does get very confusing. A psychiatrist would be the person who would prescribe medication.
Okay.
A psychologist or a therapist cannot prescribe medication.
They can speak to you, but
they can provide talk therapy.
Okay.
Or different types of therapy, but they cannot prescribe medication. Your primary care physician can prescribe medication, and a psychiatrist can prescribe medication.
So everyone will talk to you, but the psychiatrist will prescribe medication.
The psychiatrist is a medical doctor that's specialized in the field of psychiatry.
Right.
And so that most of the psychiatrists in Springfield manage medications and work with therapists in the community.
Yeah, I was
going to
ask, the psychiatrists work with counselors and therapists and
right.
and everyone else.
Yes. Right. We get referrals from different doctors. Sometimes people come to our partial program or either by referral by their doctor or through the hospital or the emergency room, or sometimes they come on their own and we'll connect them with a psychiatrist.
Okay, so I call Memorial Behavioral Health Counseling. You know, I'm calling and I just want to feel better. And it suggested, come on in and talk to somebody. What's the process? What are you laying on the couch? What do you do?
I have a couch in my office. It's a denim couch. People really like it. No, people typically, our receptionists, they do a really great job helping people determine what kind of services they need, because sometimes people will call us and they're not sure what they need. And so they'll set them up with, you know, do you want a male or female therapist? You know, do you care if they're young or old or, you know, whatever.
So you get to choose who you're going to.
Yeah, we have, 14? I think mm-hmm. I don't. The numbers.
So the,
grow,
you mean there are people
right.
that will say there are people that say, I only want to speak to a male, or I only want
Absolutely.
To speak to a female.
Absolutely,
sure.
I want to speak to someone in this age group.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
You know,
really?
I do that a lot. Oh yeah.
Oh sure.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
It's
yeah.
important to have a comfort level and good rapport with your therapist. And if it's not somebody you're comfortable with, it's going to be hard to be open and really make progress with them.
I'm going to say some really terrible things, so I want to make sure that I have someone I'm never going to run into in person.
You'd be surprised.
Do people? I mean, I'm serious. They'll be that specific?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. But the thing of it is that you want an atmosphere where they're completely comfortable whatever they want or whatever they need. I tell people all the time on their first appointment, you know, this is my philosophy. This is what I, you know, if this works for you, great. If not, there's other names I can gladly give to you. I'm not offended. I've raised 3 big mean kids. You cannot offend me. You know, so whatever you need, that's my job, is to find that for you. And if it doesn't work the way we're doing it, then let's find somebody who's fits what you need, because we all learn differently. Our brains are all wired differently, and that has to connect. If there's not a personal connection, there's no investment.
From a patient standpoint, we can all probably figure out how that feels. Give me from a therapist standpoint, from that standpoint, where's their list of priorities? I'm sure priority one is we got to make this person better. But I mean, is all the what are the things that go under consideration there? I mean, I imagine, you know, privacy or confidentiality is one. But I mean, what are the things from a therapist aspect? What do they think of? What do they
really
prioritize?
It really, truly, let me know what you think. Mm-hmm. It's up to that person. I want to know their mm-hmm. definition of better. I want uh-huh. to know their definition of healthy, because one guy coming in and his definition is, you know, well, I just want to get up and be able to go to work every day. Okay, great. Somebody else's definition of that is, no, I have to go to college and do this. And I mean, you know, so my job is to see how they see it. And then,
so you set their goals with, well, you set your goal with what they want to do.
Well, I don't yes. have goals. My goal okay. is mm-hmm. that they come in and they leave, and they mm-hmm. come in and leave. That's
right.
the goal. You know? Mm-hmm. And it's whatever they want. My job is to find what fits for them. I like to tell
okay.
people, we open up the buffet and I might suggest, oh, try the broccoli, you know, but you might not like it, but just try it. And you'd be surprised the number of people willing to do different things, just because you have good rapport with them, and they're like, well, I trust her. She said it would work, and you know what it did.
And that's the thing is what's the most important thing that you find in getting them to trust you? In getting, you know, like when we're talking about a new person comes in, they really want help, and I doubt they trust right off the bat. Maybe they do. Maybe some people do. Maybe they immediately take to it. But as a therapist, mm-hmm. you know, there's got to be something that says,
right.
hey, it's going to be okay. You need to, because there has to be a bond, right? There has to be something.
Yes, there does. And it really, it depends on the individual. Each person who comes in is an individual, and they're different, and their needs are different. Their preferences are different. And we have to listen for those things. And I think two key things that come to mind right off the bat are listening, taking them seriously, and validating their feelings.
Absolutely.
Letting them know it's okay to think the way they're
mm-hmm.
thinking.
this is one of my favorite stories, and if my son is listening, he's going to kill me. But I tell this a lot. Stress is relative to each person's life, and when my son, who's 31, was 5 and in kindergarten, my husband and I were complaining about our jobs, and he unbuckled and came to the front of the van with tears in his eyes, and he goes, "You think you've had a rough day? I've had to learn letters and numbers today." Now, if that doesn't teach you about the personalization of what stress is, nothing will, you know? Mm-hmm. It's been one of my favorite life lessons, but it's true with every person that walks in. So somebody can come in and they're upset about something that happened in 1942. Honestly, that happened with some woman I saw once. I was like, oh, I wasn't even born then, right. You know? Mm-hmm. But it was real and painful to her today as it was in 1942.
So as a therapist, you have to go with that. Like, okay.
Absolutely.
So it's, yeah, absolutely. You definitely can't belittle. I don't even know what the word I'm even looking for, but you can't. Every single thing they say, you have to take everything they say as this is serious.
And we can't personalize it. It's not
about
us.
There you go.
It has nothing to do with what I think or how I feel. It's all about them.
It's fascinating. I envy. On one hand, I envy what you guys do because I love listening. Like, even when I do these interviews, I learn so much from the experts because I love to listen and hear, even though I do interrupt a lot. But I mean, to hear these things and learn, that I think and just to have conversations, I think is so amazing. I want to, what about medication? Does every, the people you see, are they all on medicine? You mentioned, different types of pills or different kinds of drugs they're prescribed. Does everyone get prescribed drugs, or is it just a different amount, or so many, you know?
Statistically, they say that if someone just goes for talk therapy, they'll have, better than 50% recovery. And if it's just medicine, better than 50% recovery. But then if you have medicine and talk therapy, it goes up to, 95%.
You put them together.
Right.
And
but not everybody needs it, you know, or maybe they just need something to help them sleep for a little while. So then they can get up and going on their own.
Lack of sleep? Does lack of sleep lead to depression, or does depression cause lack of sleep?
You like chicken
and egg? Chicken and egg, right. I know.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
But are there studies that say either or probably there's both? I don't know.
Luckily, we're learning more and more about the importance of sleep and the science of sleep.
Yeah.
And that is contributing to a lot of aspects in medicine. If you just hear about the sleep studies and people wearing CPAPs and helping regulate their blood pressure. I mean, there's lots of new information out there all the time. But sleep is a normal part of our lifetime. We need that. And when we miss those, that becomes a symptom. Sometimes people don't sleep enough. Sometimes they sleep too much.
I think it's one of the biggest dangers we have today. I had a conversation with my wife today, and she hates to have the conversation. She's going to kill me for bringing it up on the air. So please, if you know her, don't tell her, because I know she's not listening right now. Do not tell her about this stuff. But she doesn't get enough sleep.
Yeah.
And I'm very concerned, and I tell her all the time. I say, you need to get – I say, honey, and this is I honestly said this afternoon. I go, what can I do to help you get more sleep? And then she's, well, you can't, because I have to do blah, 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 all these things, and I can't go to bed until this time. And so I start, well, listen, Bella, my daughter, Bella and I will do this and this and this. It's like this, it's a hard conversation to have, but when someone doesn't get enough sleep, they're very, the stress level seems to be higher, the everything seems to be higher with them. Yeah. And now you're saying that depression also is, there is a, in some cases it ties in. I want to, when we come back, you guys, I want to talk about the myths of depression to wrap it up. We're doing I could do 2 hours on this. You guys are, it's fascinating to listen to it. I'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the myths of depression when we continue with Ask the Expert in just a moment.
You're listening to Ask the Expert on News Radio 1240 and 107.5 FM, WTAX.
We are back discussing depression today on Ask the Expert. Sandra Wise, Brenda Flesch, they are my experts today. We've had I hope you feel the same. I feel like we've had this fantastic conversation about it, and I hope the listeners are picking stuff up from it. Depression is something we hear about more. Thank God we hear about it more now than we probably ever have before. But there's a lot of correct information given? There's also a lot of myths. Can we talk about some of those myths associated with mental health in general? Give me some of those myths that we hear all the time.
Well, I think a lot of people think that people who are depressed are just lazy and they just need to get up and do something, and that it will help them to get over it. And that is not true. They are not lazy people. They are sick people. People who are depressed have an illness, and it is not about being lazy. That is a symptom of depression.
So, and automatically people just say, oh, well, they're lazy, and that's why they're not. But it's a physical, it manifests itself in a physical way where you just can't bring yourself to that. That's a good one, because you hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. Or else that their laziness is what's causing it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Give me another one. What else have we?
Sometimes people will say, great, first you tell me I'm depressed, and now I'm losing my mind. I can't remember anything. Or they'll say, great, now I got Alzheimer's. It's like, no, part of the symptoms of depression is having trouble remembering things, forgetting appointments, forgetting where you put your keys, where did I park my car at the mall, those kind of things. Your brain has, in the front part of your brain, the working memory. It's what allows you to remember why you walked in the room. And so normally maybe you can remember three things. So if I said, bring me my, you know, orange cup and that new John Grisham book and my, you know, sweater, and they bring in a piece of fruit, the orange. And you're like, I didn't even say that. No, but their ears heard all of those things, but their brain only picked up the word orange.
Wow, that could be a sign of it, huh?
Yeah, it's great. Your brain is greatly impacted by your depression. And so people, you know, will think they're terrified. They're afraid to tell people that I can't remember things, or I don't remember you saying that. You'll hear couples argue about that all the time. And when somebody has depression, I told him that or I told her that. And the other person swears they've never heard it. And they probably did, but their brain just did not pick it up because of the depression.
Mm-hmm. I've learned so much today. Hey, really quick, give me, you mentioned earlier that they're a group. Really quick, group. What is group when you said that?
At the partial program, we have group therapy. But in the community, there are support groups that we refer people to all the time. The Depression Bipolar Support Alliance has a meeting every Tuesday night. The GROW group in Springfield, it's a 12-step group based for depression, for mental illness. And then NAMI, the National Association for Mentally Ill, they all have groups for people with mental illness for support. They're not run as therapeutic groups, but they are free to the public, and people can go and get some help.
If a person's clinically depressed, can they get better?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of them think they can't, right?
Oh, absolutely.
They're just convinced nothing's going to help.
That's part of it. Mm-hmm. Pessimism is a symptom of depression, that you think everything is personal, permanent, and pervasive. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of the symptoms.
So anybody out there listening and that is convinced no one's going to fix this, I can't even bring myself to do whatever, all those feelings, you can get help. You can get better.
Yes.
And they need to know that. People don't know it, right? Some
Absolutely.
People just don't understand it.
Recovery is possible.
And you guys see it every day?
Luckily, yes. Mm-hmm. We do see it every day.
Yes.
People come in struggling, and it's just, you know, and they'll say, you saved my life. And I'm like, I didn't save it. I opened up the buffet. You took it.
Like, you saved your own life. Like,
you and that's what it
pat
takes.
Pat yourself on your back. Don't
Absolutely.
Pat me on
That's
back.
Right.
Absolutely. That's what it takes. But that willingness to just explore it is the first step.
Yeah, to admit it, right?
Mm-hmm. To just say, okay, maybe this is what, I don't know what's going on, but maybe I'll listen to you.
It's so strange that so many problems can be solved by just admitting we have a problem, right? Or at least the first step to solving it.
That's the first step.
Admitting we have a problem. It was fascinating. You guys, I really appreciate it. It was fascinating today.
Thank you.
Sandra Wise, an adult outpatient therapist. Brenda Flesch, also an adult outpatient therapist. She's also a registered nurse with the Partial Hospitalization Program. Are my experts today on Ask the Expert.
This has been Ask the Expert on